The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty, along with Eric Baranchek, and we're here to talk about the Green Bay Packers' surprising 24-22 loss to the Chicago Bears in the regular season finale, and we'll take a little look ahead to the wild card round game at Philadelphia for the Packers also. But Eric, let's just jump right in. Did you have any takeaways from this game? I mean, it was a poor, poor offensive performance again. That's 2 weeks in a row where they've, for at least half a game, have done not much on offense. And in this case, Jordan Love only played barely more than a quarter before he came out because of an elbow injury.
Takeaways? Yeah. I like their backup running backs. I think they showed a little bit of promise there that, you know, you can do get some stuff accomplished with those guys. Especially Emmanuel Wilson. I like the way that he, you know, a lot of times young running backs, they just like to just dive right ahead, right? You know, this is where the hole is, and this is where the hole is supposed to be. He did a nice job of being able to be patient and set up his blocks. If you look at that 21-yard touchdown run that he had, you know, I thought he did a real nice job of setting up his blocks and being patient and then taking it around the corner. So he had enough speed to do that. So I guess that would be a takeaway.
When I rewatched the game, they did have, when we talked on the phone, you know, I mentioned about a couple outside runs they had that he cut back. They had one in the first quarter and one in the second. One was a toss left and one was a toss right. And both of them, as he got to the edge, it was shut down and he cut them back sharp. And one, he got 4 yards on a first down, and the other one, he got 7 yards on second and six. So he showed some cutback ability on the outside runs and the ability to bounce outside on that touchdown on an inside run.
Yeah. And not only that, but also turn his shoulders and get north and south. I mean, that's really important because so many times young running backs, they want to run around, especially, you know, you come from college where you're probably the fastest guy in the field or very close to the fastest guy in the field where you think you can run around stuff. And guess what? Everybody on that field on Sundays are just as fast or faster than you. So yeah, it takes sometimes for those guys to adjust.
So what's going on with this offense? You know, they finished the season eighth in points, or no, that's defense. They sixth in points scoring on offense. So that's not bad. But what's going on there? They just, you know, the really poor start, 3 points in 2.5 quarters against the Vikings. Before Love got hurt, they only had 3 points against the Bears in a game where they were obviously trying to jump out to a quick lead so they could get people out of the game in the second half. What's going on with their offense and their passing game? There's just no consistency, no juice, and the last 2 weeks have not been good.
Well, I think it goes to the I think it's been not perfect for quite a while. I mean, they're scoring points. There's no doubt about that because they got a heck of a running game. And they got a dynamic runner back there that – it's kind of a big equalizer, right? You know, you don't have to rely on the pass game. You can run it, and you can make some things happen in the play-action world and all that kind of stuff. But I think the reality is that, you know, the quarterback just is too hesitant. To me, it's about the game slowing down. You know, last year as a first-year starter, I don't think there's a lot of stuff that he didn't know that he didn't know. And now he's processing all this information and he doesn't want to make mistakes and wants to be perfect, you know, and you're driving down Highway 41 and you see your face on the billboard and you got the big contract and everybody wants to talk to you and be on their shows and all this stuff. It's a lot of pressure and you want to be perfect. And I think the game just hasn't slowed down and it will hopefully, but because there are times where there are guys open and he's just not trusting his eyes and not making the throws. You know, early on in the season, I thought he was taking too many risks and throwing downfield when the checkdowns were open. And now it seems like some of the plays that are starting to develop downfield, he's not trusting and throwing plays, throwing some of those ones where he knows he's not going to get picked off. You go back to the Viking game. There was a play early on where they threw it out to Dobbs, where that was a really safe play because if he doesn't get completed, it's not going to get picked off. But they had a tight end in the middle of the field that he should have hit, and he didn't make that throw. But if he throws high, you know, it gets picked off by safety, or, you know, so the percentage throw was probably higher to throw it to the inside of the to the numbers to the tight end than to the out, but maybe not as safe. So that's what I think is going on. And I think they need to, but what's here's the interesting part is when they get in their 2 minute and they get hurry up offense, they want to start chucking the pill down the rot down the field. He looks pretty sharp. So you know what my thoughts are. Start the game that way.
Yeah, we talked about that today, and that's a big part of our column is some of the things that they can do. And that would be number one on my list if I were them. Because it's something you can do, you know. I mean, they, you know, they work 2 minute all the time, and it's not like they have to go hurry up. They can line up right away, but still take a little time to, you know, check out the defense if they want to actually do that. But it makes it harder to substitute. Defense gets tired, and it's simpler, right? Make simpler calls so they can communicate it all, and so it might be easier for the quarter unclutter his mind a little bit.
Right, just let him go out there and do it, and I think. They're going up against a pretty stout front seven. And, you know, I think if they're going to stand up there and go blow to blows with them, I think they're going to end up not in a good spot. So why not come out and do something different, surprise them a little bit, throw the ball around, throw it, you know, not all around because you still have that run game that you want to live with and you want to die with, you know, but I think they can get the ball out of his hand quicker, running slants, you know, you can run three slants on the field, two on one side, one on the other, and both at different lengths. And whichever guy, if they're playing zone, whatever, you know, if he backs off to the deeper one and, you know, zone floods where they're going to put two or three guys in a zone and make the Eagles decide who they're going to try and take away and throw it to the other guy. I think that's the way that they're going to be successful. I think and the hard part is now, you know, you got that big physical defense. You'd kind of like to throw over the top of them, but you know, without Watson, that could probably might not be the best option either. So they're going to have to come up with some different ideas, and just most importantly, the quarterback. The game's got to slow down for him, and then they have to execute.
So here's a question for you: What do you think the chances are that, for instance, doing some up-tempo stuff has been on LaFleur's radar for a few weeks here, but that he doesn't want to do it because he doesn't want to show it until the playoffs. You think that there's any chance he's been keeping that in his hip pocket, or because of all the struggles they've had, is that something he would have pulled out just to get things going in the here and now?
Well, they may have wanted to disguise it. I'm more of the guy. I want to go out there and run it in real life and run it a little bit, but they don't really need to because they've done it all season long. I mean, you look in fourth quarter of both Viking games and Detroit. You know, they come back and making games look close. And I don't think they really need to practice it. I think just need to buckle down and do it. The hard part isn't the fact that you know it can work. It's the ego part, right? This is our offense. This is what we run. We're going to run the way I want it to run versus, you know what? This is what we got to do to win. And that's a fine line. And unfortunately, many coaches, they can't get out of the way of their own shadow, and they need to be able to adjust a little bit more appropriately to what they have, not only for personnel-wise and for what's working. And if they want to live to fight another day, you know, if they want to get through Saturday or Sunday, excuse me, they're going to have to perform much better. We all know that, but how? Why? Your players are, you're not switching out players. You don't have any crazy plays that are, you know, you just the oop de loo or anything like that that you haven't shown. It's week 18. There's not much out there that hasn't been seen. I don't think that the Packers were playing possum on Sunday against the Bears. I don't buy that. But I think they just got to go out and do it. They're going to make the change. They're going to do it.
Is there fool's gold in the up-tempo? Because while it worked against the Lions and Vikings in those games, they were also playing from a pretty big deficit. And both of those teams probably were in a little more of a prevent mode on defense.
Sure, absolutely. But you got to do something to get the quarterback to settle down. Yeah. Because he's too uptight. He's too worried about throwing picks. And I mean, you go back to the Viking game. There's a whole bunch yesterday, or only a few, because he wasn't really in much. But there, you go throughout the season, and you saw it tighten up, especially after the bye week. So, I think it's something to shake it up, something to get a spark. And if you can still run the ball out of it. There's no one says you can't run the ball just because you're running, running up tempo. And you can still maintain your integrity of what you want to do on offense. You're just not going to huddle up much, or it's going to be like a muddle huddle or line calling out on the line of scrimmage, things like that to just mix it up, get something going, get a spark somehow, some way.
You and I talked about him going under center more too. I looked all this stuff up. They went under center last year. 26% of their snaps for Love snaps. This year it's been 23.5%. That's not a huge difference, but it is a difference. It's funny, in this game, actually his past game, they had Love was out there for 23 snaps and 9 of them were under center. So that's getting upwards of close to 40%, I think. So I wonder, maybe that was more of the plan and they just didn't get a chance to flesh it out because he got hurt.
Yeah, could be. But that you would think just for the way it feels, you'd feel like last year that he was under center more. Surprising that he wasn't. I still think they need to do more of it, especially if they're going to run the ball and do the play action pass stuff. That certainly will open up for him.
So big news today, which, I think we all knew it was probably pretty serious. Those non-contact knee injuries are usually bad, but Christian Watson, done for the season, reportedly an ACL. I guess we could talk both about the short-term implications that, as in finishing out the season, and how that also could affect his career. I mean, basically their deep game is gone now. I know people are talking about Bo Melton, but I just don't think he's that great a deep threat. He's a small target. And I don't think he tracks the ball that well downfield. So probably Malik Heath is their best bet, because at least he can go up and get it, even though he's not very fast.
Well, maybe they could put some glue on the hands of Jaden Reed, because he's got some speed to be able to do some of that stuff. I know he's more of a herky jerky guy, but he's had some long touchdowns in his career and opportunities. So last year, he certainly had, a much better year. But I think the other part of it, losing Watson, he's the guy that's going to get you over the top, and he's going to at least drag the safety, a safety along with him. I get all of that stuff. But, I mean, how much in this season, how many games did they really hang their hat on this guy? This is we're going to win the ball game with this guy. I didn't.
It was – Yeah, well, they never did that, but, when that stretch, when they won several games straight after the halfway point, he had about 3 or 4 weeks in a row there where he was making a play or two downfield, and maybe that made a big difference. Now, the quality of competition was probably a big factor there, too, that, that was not the strength of their schedule, except for playing the Lions in there. But I don't know. He did – I thought he made a difference, even if it's only a couple plays a game. I think that matters. I don't know.
I don't think they're going to – the wheels have fallen off the cart now because Christian Watson's not playing. I mean, I feel bad for him, and, certainly it's a big blow to him personally and for the football team. But, if Jordan Love goes down, chances are they don't even stand a chance to win the game. You lose Christian Watson – you still got Josh Jacobs. You still got Kraft. You still got a couple other receivers that are serviceable. I I think that skill level and that just flat out blazing, blinding speed is gone. But I still think there's enough there. They got enough with their power running game that they can dink and dunk down the field. And then when they get inside the 10-yard line, they could just bulldoze in. And that's how I think they need to go this week anyway. I don't think they want to stand back there and five-step drop and have a quarterback hold on the ball for 3 seconds. I think that's asking for a nightmare.
So, long-term, ACL, Packers never let guys come back in less than 10 months. So that gets you to the middle of November next year before he's back. Several weeks to, you know, get into playing shape where he plays 10 snaps the first game and 15 or 20 the next. So that I don't think he's going to be a factor till getting close to January next year. I wonder what this does for his career. That'll be the last year of his contract next year. And ACLs, you know, pretty rare when guys are the same, even though with all the medical advancements, they're still never quite the same when they come back. I wonder if Watson's on the team in 2 years.
That's a really good question. I wonder too. I mean, they have to make upgrades at that position. I mean, it went from such a bright spot to just such a hole. You know, they're not making plays. Just wait. I mean, aren't they? They're in the top two or three in the league in drop passes.
Yeah, top. You know, at least top two. Yeah.
So they're struggling there, and they're going to have to make up the personnel wise, or the people they have are going to have to really start to develop. You know, coming into this thing, going into next year. So there's some big question marks there. And heck, if they draft a couple and pick up a veteran somehow, away, might not be any room for them.
Yeah, they're, you know, I mean, you know, we talk about drafting a couple, but man, they got to draft a couple pass rushers. They got to draft maybe three corners. There's only so many picks to go around. They're going to have a lot of needs this offseason. It's going to be a really interesting offseason to see what they do at receiver. Maybe they go after T. Higgins. I had somebody suggest that in a chat last week, and I was like, man, that's not the worst idea. You know, the market at, from what I could tell, the market at pass rusher and corner, the free agent market, is not very good. Higgins is a better receiver than anybody available, for pass rusher or corner. So that would make some sense. Do you consider him a one? I think when we talked before, did you kind of talk one and a half maybe? That's what I'm thinking. He's more a one and a half than a one.
T. Higgins?
Yeah.
Oh, if he's on the Packers, he's their number one guy.
Absolutely. Well, he's their number one, but like, is he a true number one? Not every team's got a number
one. I think so. I absolutely. Well, if you look at just his production, the last 2 years, both him and Christian Watson both played 24 games. Christian Watson, I think, has had 10 touchdowns. T. Higgins had 15. And T. Higgins had 1,500 yards receiving in the last 2 years. And, you know, Watson's around 900, 700, 800, 900, somewhere in there. The production level isn't even the same. So I think he steps into the. I think he's a number one receiver, and he steps onto that football field with the green and gold, and he's it makes that team much better. It's not a lateral move. That's having him on the team is not a lateral move between him and Christian Watson. Watson, a good player, but T. Higgins is stepping ahead above what Watson is, and who's the number one on this football team anyway? You don't have one.
Well, yeah, there's definitely not one, and I think Higgins would, without a doubt, walk in here as the number one. Yeah, I mean, he does benefit from having Chase over there too. With the coverage that guy draws, it's like Addison. You know, Addison. If Addison were with the Packers, he'd be their number one too. Also, but Addison for sure benefits from playing with Jefferson too. So, I remember back when Alvin Harper. Remember him with the Cowboys?
Yeah, Cowboys.
He had a big year. He signed a huge free agent contract. I can't even remember who he signed with now. And he was a total bust once he got away from Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman and all that. He was a total bust. Obviously, T. Higgins is a much better player than Harper was. But I wonder if the Packers have the money in the offseason to do it. And so if the Bengals don't sign him between – the end of this, you know, whenever they're done playing and the start of free agency, man, I wonder if that's the guy the Packers go after. I don't know. It's not the worst idea.
No, I would agree that that would be a really good option.
You know, one thing I, you know, we were going over what we should talk about. One thing I didn't mention, which I don't know if you want to do it right now, is there's an update that we like to do every week.
Oh, and,
how about that guy?
Yeah, I tell you what, they might want to sign this, put that guy on the punt return or the punt cover team, because at least he's got three special teams tackles as a Packer. So yeah, that Mr. McManus, keep the beard. It's going strong. Hits another 55 yarder. What a great, great
that's on a cold on a cold day. The ball, you know, the ball's deader, doesn't fly as far. I never saw a replay, and watching live, I only watched him. I didn't watch the ball. So did that barely clear? Or did it clear by a few yards, or how much?
Oh no, he had another couple of yards, probably another 3 to 5 yards somewhere in there, for sure. And his ball is close down the middle as you can imagine for a 55 yarder, you know, just pinned it, you know. That's and you know what? It was funny that you know, that played a little bit of a role in that debacle at the end of the game there with LaFleur. That he didn't, when he called that timeout, just let that clock run. You got a good kicker, but you know, has had such poor kicker for the last two seasons that it, or last year and beginning part of this year, that it was probably a little bit tougher for him. But
that's
a weapon.
Yeah. That's a big mistake by the head coach there. I mean, you know, probably the Bears probably would have called timeout, but then they would have had zero timeouts left when they got the ball back. So, and they needed that time. They needed that one timeout to get themselves to help get in position to kick that winning field goal. So yeah, that was a big gaffe by LaFleur. No getting around that. It's just, you know, this game, it was less important. Of course you want to win it, but it was less important to win it than it was for the starters, especially on offense, to play a good game. And they just didn't. So that game was just a total failure on almost all counts. That's the way I came out of it. I don't know if you felt the same way.
Obviously we wanted to see, or everyone would want to see, you go out there, you score 21 points, 28 points or something like that in the first half. You roll a bad football team. In the second half, you sit on the sideline and yuck it up and have a good time. And unfortunately, they just weren't ready to play, you know. 2 weeks in a row, they came out against the Vikings. They weren't ready to play there, and didn't have the, you know, their adjustments were slow and late coming. And then you come out to this game, and I don't know how you don't get excited to play the Bears. I don't know how you're not ready to play them. But certainly, you know, dealing with success is a heck of a lot harder than dealing with failure. And you know, on the surface, it's one of the things we talked about early in the year, Pete, was how are they going to handle the success from last year? And how, you know, looking at it, you know, hindsight's 2020, you would say, you know, they won 11 regular season games and that feels pretty good. But I would say the improvement wasn't what we all were expecting. And you know, they didn't handle success very good. So this is good. This is a good thing. You know, it can be a good thing. It depends on how they look at it and what happens over there inside that building. But it can be a good thing for, hey, guys, this is a good wake-up call for you. You don't, just because you had a pretty decent a few games in the playoffs, you come through here, now you're all of a sudden you're a Super Bowl contender. It don't work that way. And, you know, so it's a good motivator for teams that have had success and then they kind of stub their toe. Now, good teams – good leadership teams, they will learn from this and move on. And other teams will just, you know, kind of might just wallow around here.
So after the, I got home, watched the Sunday night game. And afterwards, it might have been on SportsCenter, actually. They showed Sean Payton talking to his team after Denver's game. And he goes, he says to him, "Let me tell you something, guys. Young and hungry is," he either used the word "powerful" or "dangerous." He goes, "Young and hungry is dangerous." And he said it like five times. And it really had me thinking back to last season. That's what these guys were. They were young and hungry. And just to go to the point you're talking about here, they're still pretty young, still the youngest team in the league. But I wonder if that success in the playoffs affected their hunger. They just, you don't have that young and hungry feel that you had, you know, last year at this time. At least I can't say I see it. I don't know if you do or not.
No, they're going to have to fight it. They want to be successful on Sunday, boy, because that's probably the worst case scenario that they could run into is Philly.
So what do you think of this game? So I don't know if you saw this or not, but on Nick Sirianni, the Eagles coach today said that Hurts is still in the concussion protocol. Still, he's missed three games already because of this. And as of today, he's still in the protocol. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean a lot because guys, you, even when you return to practice, you're still in the protocol going through practice until you can do certain tests after practicing and then they clear you. So this could be a whole lot of nothing, but could his status be in jeopardy for Sunday? I mean,
I would find that very hard to believe.
I would too.
Would you?
Yeah.
I can't imagine that he wouldn't be playing on Sunday.
I'd be stunned. I guess the thing, the telltale will be if he practices, if he's on the practice field Wednesday, he's going to be on the field on Sunday. So that'll be the telltale. Even if it's just limited practice, got to believe he's going to be out there for the game then. So,
yeah.
You know, I still wonder, I know you don't think this is very likely, but I think missing three games is enough where even though his body will feel fresh, I think that might be just enough where he could be a hair rusty and maybe miss a throw or two, that could end up if it's a couple third downs and he misses the throws, you know, then they're punting the ball away. I wonder if that could be a factor. He's a really good player. So, maybe not, but I do wonder if missing three games it's not like just getting a week off.
No, I agree. I think there could be some mental parts of the game that kind of you got to get geared back up for, but that guy's he's a vet, and these guys, they know what they're doing. He goes out. He was going to go out and play hard, and I would expect him to play a really good game. You know, it's going to come down to – I don't think it's going to come down to whether or not he's rusty or not. It's going to come down to one thing and one thing only. They need to make Jalen Hurts beat him, and you only do that by stopping Barkley, and that's it. You got to stop Barkley and take chances on second. Hopefully you get to a second and long or third and long, and then you got to send five. I know Halfley doesn't like to do that, but you got to send five and six and just trust your corners. You know, I think Valentine has come a long way in the last several games, and I think you got to trust him and just do it. You know, in Detroit, they had a very few man-to-man snaps, and as they've gotten closer and closer to this week, they've had more man-to-man snaps where they've had snaps where they were actually running man-to-man, not just – quarters or cover two, like they were just really in man on the outside. And you know what, you're playing, they're going to get beat at some point, right? You're playing against one of the best receivers in football, and he's going to beat you. AJ Brown is going to beat you. I don't care who your cornerbacks are. So you can't get tied up in the fact that he's going to get a couple catches. Heck, he might even have 7, 8, 9 catches. So what? It's going to happen no matter who the corners are. You know, he doesn't go through the season with, you know, too many games without catching 5+ balls, and he's going to get you on a one, probably really, really, really bad. But you got to do it because otherwise, you sit back there and dropping 7 all night long, and rushing 4. Jalen Hurts will just sit back there and sit on his couch with his chips and a beer and decide when he's going to throw the ball when he's good and ready. You know, they can't do that. They got to get him off the spot, and they got to get him on the ground.
Yeah, because the hard part is, you know, you got to rush this guy, but you can't lose your lanes because he'll get out of there and he can run you to death.
Yeah, so your rush plan's got to be good.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that are your outside guys, your outside guys can't be upfield. Your outside guys got to be – once you get even with the quarterback on your rush – you either got to spin out of it, or you got to put the brakes on it, and you cannot go up. The worst thing that can happen is you go past him. Now he's got a room. He's smart enough, and he's a veteran. He knows he's going to go up, slide out either way, and still have the acuity to make a pass. And that's what can't happen. So your rush lanes and your rush plan has to be really on point. And they have been the first time they played him. So. And I think the best part they got now is they got a linebacker that if they want to get after it, they got a linebacker that can spy, that can be physical. And not only that, he's got the speed and the explosion and the twitchiness. He's just got that suddenness that can go and get that quarterback in Adrian Cooper.
Yeah, and sure sounds like Quay Walker will be back this week. So you would think at least at minimum on passing downs when they're in nickel, those two guys will be on the field. So if nothing else, they'll have some speed and length at the inside linebacker position. I'm still not sure they should be playing Walker every down on early downs. He's just not a downhill player. You were on that going back to his rookie year. But I don't know if they would actually do it where they would play Wilson on early downs and then put him on only play Walker on later downs. I think with the green dot on his helmet and everything, if he's playing, he's playing every snap. I don't know if
he's got the green dot now.
45 Wilson.
He's not in on every set.
Yeah, he was. Well, actually, this game, you know what? I don't know who had the green dot this last game. Might have been Cooper. He was out there pretty much every snap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did Wilson, notice they had cards on the sideline. Like they had like plays. Like, you know, like they would hold up a card that had a number on it.
Yeah. So
that's why I was curious. I couldn't see who had the green dot either.
So were those cards the numbers just because they've had those all season? And their personnel, you know, they'll say 12 or 11, you know, they're telling what personnel the offense is in. So I don't know if the cards you saw were any different than that or not.
I just saw them holding up cards.
Yeah, that's a really good question. We'll have to check on that one when locker room's Wednesday. So that's a really good question on who I don't know who wore that. So anyway, we're getting to that time where we're going to answer questions. We ask people to weigh in on Twitter to flag both you and me and ask a question. We've got a bunch in here. So are you ready?
Oh, I'm really ready. I think Todd Simon has got a really good question.
Yeah, we got a lot of them. So Todd Simon, I'll read it for you. Matt LaFleur has...
I can only look at the pictures.
Yes, it sounded condescending, didn't it?
That's my boy.
Matt LaFleur has someone who helps decide if he should challenge a call on the field. Does he have someone in a time management guru to help him decide management, I think he's saying here, of the game clock? If not, should he?
Yeah. I think they do. Who's his right hand up there?
So the guy, Connor Lewis, who's also an assistant quarterbacks coach. So he's not the quarterbacks coach. He's the assistant. I don't even know if he's assistant quarterbacks coach anymore. He definitely helps with the challenges. And I think he helps with the time management too. But they also have an analytics guy who's either in the box or on the sidelines, usually somewhere near LaFleur, who helps with that stuff too. And I think it's changed some years. You know, I don't know exactly what the setup is, but yes, he does have people helping him with both of those things. And I don't know if it's Connor Lewis doing both or if Lewis only does the review, the help on the reviews. BC Daly, Brennan Daly. This wasn't for us. You're not here on this one. So Say Cheese, has this team shown that they weren't as good as that we thought they were a month ago, or have they regressed at the end of the season? They seem to be playing worse than they were in early December. How is that possible? Eric?
Oh, it's very possible. I think we talk about it a lot recently anyway, is that, you know, second year starting quarterback. And I think a lot of second year guys struggle. Look at Stroud down in Houston. He was gangbusters last year, and this year, you know, so they've it's a development process. And you I steal a phrase from you that improvement isn't always linear, right? Growth isn't linear. It's you get steps here, steps there, steps there. And I think that's the biggest reason, is the quarterback isn't playing as loose as he needs to be. And I think there's been some execution problems on offense every once in a while too. It really showed when Malik Willis was in the ball game, that there were some times where there just wasn't really like looked like it was like a locomotive that just wasn't quite firing. It's very possible that these things happen, and you know, it's a coach's responsibility now to get the thing back on track.
You know, they didn't have the toughest schedule during a lot of that stretch. You know, they played a really battered 49ers team. Miami was struggling. But the win at Seattle was the one where I thought, all right, maybe they're starting to hit, you know, kind of hit a peak here towards the end of the season. And that ended up not really carrying over. I don't know if you make anything of that or not, but that's the game I thought maybe would get them going. And then they crushed New Orleans here, but then the last 2 weeks they've laid eggs.
Yeah, and I it's kind of surprising, to be honest with you. But you know, the other thing too you got to remember is they're the teams they faced with Minnesota Vikings was a good football team, and the Chicago Bears were highly motivated. Obviously, a lot more motivated than the Packers were. You know, 11 straight games of getting beat by these guys. There was some motivation. Those guys were ready to play, and unfortunately, the Packers weren't. So
that punt return for a touchdown early to get them up 7-0, and that's a big difference. That had to give a big burst to that sideline. You know, if the Packers get up 7-0, man, things could unravel fast for the Bears. But for them to get up 7-0 and to do it, just steal 7 points like that, that had to be a big boost for that sideline.
I can guarantee you that's from now on, every punt that's played, you're going to hear guys screaming down the field where the ball is. You know, a lot of times you not so much. It's really hard on the TV shot, and even when you're every once in a while during a preseason game, you can hear it where, you know, the ball gets kicked and you can hear players either on the sideline or on the field alerting the team. The ball is right, middle, left. You'll hear that. It's hard on TV because there's too much noise. But I can guarantee you the rest of the way out, every punt, you're going to hear a lot of that.
Yeah.
Probably. Hopefully not too much on Sunday.
Every 13 years when they play the Bears, they got to be ready for that one to come out. 2011,
what a play.
They did the same thing.
What a play.
We got a question from Tim. I'm guessing this is Mattaccio, maybe Mattaccio. What's up with Robert Saleh for next season?
Your guess is as good as mine, Pete.
Yeah, I do not know. I'm thinking I would be really surprised if LaFleur would – fire Halfley and bring in Saleh, even though LaFleur and Saleh are really tight. And I don't know if Saleh's up for being a coordinator or if he's going to sit out next season and then, well, like some of these coaches do, and then come back and try to be a head coach the year after, or whether he'd be willing to take a defensive coordinator job. No idea there. I'd be surprised if LaFleur made some kind of move. You never know. You never know what these guys are thinking. But so I guess the answer to your question is, Tim, your guess is as good as ours. Question for Matt Jones. How has your assessment of Love as the long-term answer at quarterback changed, if at all, over this season? Eric?
None. I think he's dripping wet with quarterback talent. When I look around the league and watch other guys play, I don't see the same talent. I think it's the bottom line. Look at Sam Darnold. 7 years, and now he's finally playing good football, except for against the Lions last evening. But yeah. 7 years, this guy's only on year number two. It's far too early to throw the baby out of the bathwater. He's got to slow down. It took Rodgers a minute to slow down. It took Favre a minute to slow down. He's just got to slow down. The game is going to slow down. No matter good, bad, or indifferent, it will slow down for him. And when it does, if he can capitalize on it, as it is, but it's too early now to say that he's not going to be a good quarterback in the future.
I think I said this before when I talked to Mike Holmgren about this stuff a few weeks ago. He said, in his opinion, it takes until the third year that the guy's a starter before you really start getting a sense of what you got. So that'll be next season for Jordan Love. We got a question from Chris Chatburn.
All right, Chris.
You're going to like this one. Eric, this is right up your alley. We could end up with a 15-minute rant here. Just prepare yourselves, people. Is it time to ask the question, is Matt LaFleur good enough in all areas to bring a team to the highest level, or just a good high-floor, low-ceiling leader?
That is an awesome question. I think there needs to be some – I think over at 1265, whenever the season concludes, whether it's Sunday or a week from Sunday, whatever it is, they have to sit down and answer that question. They have to look themselves in the mirror and look them and understand if this is the guy that's going to get them to the top, get them to the Super Bowl, or if he's just going to get you 11, 12 wins during the regular season, and that's it. I don't know. I guess – I think it's a very valid question to ask, and I think you look at it. You got two NFC Championship games with Rodgers. You got bumped in the divisional round when you were the home field advantage. So you had three entrances there into the playoffs with nothing to come out of it except for a bunch of sore feelings. And then you have the last year they had a nice little run, so that's pretty good. You feel good about that, but now you see the wheels kind of starting to fall off and wondering. You know, I asked you this during the game in Minnesota, and you pretty much bludgeoned me over the head. And then I shot my mouth off on Friday and got about 200,000 tweets from people that I'm nuts. But all of a sudden, what happens on this Sunday, and all of a sudden, no one thinks I'm crazy anymore. The reality is
this. They still think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly ugly. I'll give you that. But I think when you're looking at where you're at, this is kind of the fork in the road. Right. If you feel like if that management team over there feels like this is a guy that can take them to the Super Bowl, then it's no problem. But I think you got to have a short hook because you have a young team with a quarterback that is starting to emerge. If you let it go too far, you missed your window. These windows are very small in the NFL. They don't last forever. And you can see that there's a window starting to open up for this club. And if your coach is not the right guy, that you don't think he can take it to the next level, we don't know what happens in the meeting rooms. We're not there at practice. Everything that I'm saying is speculating, but what I'm seeing and what I'm getting from watching the games live and on television and when I'm watching stuff, I'm not sure. I'm not sold that he's the right guy to get to the Super Bowl. But someone over at 1265, I don't make those calls. That's for them.
Yeah. You know, I've always, if a coach has had a pretty decent amount of success, I'm always leery of changing up. Just because unless you have someone in mind you're going to replace them with, because you can end up with worse.
Sure.
I just checked on this. Just, you know, like, do you think Mike Tomlin's a good coach?
Yeah.
So from 2012 through this season, so what's that, 12 or 13 years, they had 6 years where they had 9 or 8 wins.
Bill Cowher. You could argue with the fact that Mike Tomlin has had some teams that were not very talented.
Yeah, he did have Ben Roethlisberger for a lot of those years.
Yep,
so
he did.
Bill Cowher didn't win the Super Bowl until his 14th season. You know, that's both of those guys are with Pittsburgh, and they do not change coaches. I mean, Chuck Knoll to Cowher to Tomlin, right? Three coaches
right.
since 1969. Right. I mean, that's incredible. That is the ultimate coaching stability.
I'm not saying they got to fire him. You have to look at yourself and ask the question. That's all I'm saying. Ask the question of yourself, Brian, if it's policy is the next guy, they have to ask themselves that question. That's it. What were you going to say?
Because I did look up too, you know, the Patriots didn't win any Super Bowl. They won the Super Bowl in the 04 season and they didn't win it again until 14. So they went 9 years there without a Super Bowl win. I bet there were people out in Boston who wanted Belichick fired.
They won one. They got one. He got one. So did Mike Tomlin.
Right.
But McCarthy.
And Mike McCarthy got fired, you know, from here. So,
right.
I mean, this is a kind of, you know, and most of life is like this, but the NFL is even a hair more so. It's a, what have you done for me lately? You have to keep proving it year after year after year. And with every coach in this league, until you win a Super Bowl, there are major questions about you. And then once you win one, if you don't win one again for the next couple of years, then there's the questions start rolling in again. So it's really, I would just be, if you're going to make a coaching change in a situation where you got a good team and you're winning and things look, you're doing well, you better feel really good that you can find better. That's the one thing more than any other that I would say owners need to keep in mind, because these teams that fire coaches every 3 years, they're going nowhere.
No, for sure. I'm not advocating that. I'm just thinking that, they got to look at it and find out if feel that this is the right guy that is going to get us to the top. And if not, I think you're better to get rid of the guy a year too soon than a year too late. And I also believe that, if they sit down and say, hey, listen, this is what needs to improve, and at the end of next season, next season it could be 100% different. They could go off and maybe not get to the Super Bowl, but if they do a really good job leading that team, I think there's always the argument to keep the guy around. And that's, I guess, the point that I just want to make is next year they could get to the Super Bowl and I'd look like a crock because I'm saying fire the guy. I'm not saying firing him. I'm saying you got to just make sure that the decision is right. That's all that I think. And maybe it is. Maybe they all feel great. Maybe they don't, but they got to look. I think they got to look, just like you look at all your, at the end of the season, you got to look at every one of your positions and every one of your players. Where are we weak? Where are we strong? Where is this player weak? Where is this player strong? And then you attack that in the offseason. Same thing with your coaching staff. They're no different. This is where we're weak. This is where we're strong. This is where we got to get better. And if they don't get better, now you have that challenge. Do you cut them or do you extend them?
A lot of big decisions coming up, and we'll talk about those too. We've had a couple more questions that we didn't get to, but we try to keep this to 40 minutes or less, and we're just over 45 now, so I better wrap this up. But I want to thank everybody who had those questions, and Seven Costanza and Eric Doms. I hope you'll try again next week, or you just refile these questions again next week if you want, and I promise we'll get to them. So thanks for everybody for checking in.
Costanza.
Yes. So
I like it.
Let's wrap this up, Erica. We got to go here. I just want to say thanks to everybody for listening in. Glad you think we're worth your time. And want to remind you that we're probably going to do a special pre-game edition of After Further Review Friday that we'll try to get up on Friday morning. Just talking about the Eagles game. It'll be shorter. Just talk about that. And then we'll for sure be back again next Monday night with posting Tuesday morning, going over the Packers wildcard game at Philadelphia. So until then, everybody take care. I just want to remind you, you've been listening to the After Further Review podcast. For Eric, I'm Pete. See you next week.
Be good.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.